Hey, it's just past 7:34 in the morning. You're listening to Upfront. My name's Brian Edwards-Teeker.
And I'm Kat Brooks. And last week, people incarcerated in the Santa Rita Jail in Dublin, California, went on a hunger strike and work stoppage, citing inhumane treatment, unsanitary living conditions, and poor food as several of their many complaints. Their strike statement detailed 25 demands. Reports from inside say there are now over 300 going on 400 striking inmates. We are joined this morning by Sergeant Ray Kelly, a spokesman with the Alameda County Sheriff's Office. Good morning, Sergeant Kelly.
Good morning, Kat.
Thank you for joining us. Sergeant Kelly, I just want to get your initial response to the allegations that conditions inside of Santa Rita are unsanitary, that inmates are being, you know, unfairly treated, the overutilization of solitary confinement, et cetera.
Well, I think that there's been some liberties taken with the descriptions inside the jail. A lot of the people describing our facility have actually never been in there. So there's definitely disagreement on what's being depicted publicly. It's very visual, the words that have been used, but they're not very accurate. It's actually one of the cleanest large jails in the country. So we take exception to that, but that's all part of the movement to gather attention for what it is they're trying to accomplish.
Sergeant Kelly, we've always played straight with each other, right? So,
yeah, absolutely.
Right? So, okay. So,
absolutely.
You know, I've been inside of Santa Rita. I've been arrested and I've been taken to Santa Rita. And the conditions that I experienced, there was feces and blood and urine on the walls. I was mistreated by the guards. And there was actually a lawsuit that the same attorney that's representing the strikers represented in 2012, I believe, following the Alan Bluetford case of four women that went in. And there was a court ruling that the jail had to be cleaned up based on a lot of the complaints that are coming out of the folks that are incarcerated there now.
Yeah, so, I mean, we did settle that case without admitting fault, but by and large, you know, you go into a jail facility, it is not going to be the cleanest of all places. That being said, we disagree that it's as stated. But we do have, in regards to the Bluford case, we did settle that, and then we did agree that every hour we would clean all those cells, and we keep a log as to doing all that. But every day we walk people through there. We're inspected constantly by all sorts of entities, the Public Health Department, the American Correctional Association, all sorts of different groups that come in there every day, all the time, looking at our facility to make sure it's up to par. You cannot run a jail in California without a heavy amount of inspection and oversight. And so if conditions were as bad as being described, we would be shut down. There's no doubt about it.
Shut down by who, Sergeant Kelly? A lot of the conversation that's in community right now is that there isn't any oversight of the jail, that the Board of Supervisors, in theory, is supposed to oversee the jail, but that Sheriff Ahern pretty much has free rein to do as he pleases.
Well, that's not true. I mean, the Attorney General of California, the federal government can come in, the State Board of Corrections can come in, the Department of Justice can come in. I think there's over 25 jails in California that are under some type of decree for whatever type of situation. So there's absolutely oversight. There is a checks and balances in place for jails, and we have no exception to that. But what we're finding, and one of the problems we're having, is that with some of the crises that we're facing on the streets, homelessness, a serious amount of addiction, mental health issues, and those are all landing in our jails. And what we're finding is that a lot of communities that are unable to take care of those who are struggling in our cities, they're putting them in jail as a last resort. And so one of the things we're working on is bridging that gap, because it cannot fall on law enforcement to fix mental health and addiction problems in individuals. It's such a complex issue, but it's like we've become this repository for a lot of these failures that have gone on, and it's really not fair to individuals that end up in our custody, and that's why we're getting some very sick people in our custody. And it's I'm thinking of a case from a couple weeks back where we had a man who had terminal stage 4 cancer, was living in an encampment, and ultimately got arrested, put in our facility. We gave him the best of medical care we could, but he passed away. And then that ends up as a jail death, like we did something wrong, when actually we were showing compassion and care for that individual. It's very trying times right now for us at our jail. It's very difficult, more than we've seen before.
Sergeant Kelly, I want to kind of get back to the demands here, because the striking prisoners at Santa Rita, they're not asking for you to fix mental illness. They're not even asking you to clean their cells. They're asking for cleaning supplies so they can get the feces and the blood off the walls themselves. Why would anyone say no to that?
We don't say no. The cleaning supplies are there. I just think the tremendous liberty has been taken to in this situation with some of the words that have been used. But there is plenty of cleaning supplies. They're everywhere. The inmates are allowed to use them. As a matter of fact, we've been issuing them out constantly. I think this is part of some of the de-incarceration movement. I think they're taking some liberties with some of the language that they're using, describing this. If you in your mind think of a place with feces on the wall and blood and urine and all these body fluids, you're thinking, oh my God, how disgusting, no person should live. Well, if you go in there, I would beg to differ that the living conditions are like that. And so I think some liberties have been taken with some of the adjectives to describe the jail.
I want to, you said something that you and I actually agree on, and that is that, you know, the place for unhoused people or people dealing with substance abuse issues is not a jail. And hopefully we will get about the business of creating, you know, some diversion programs. But to that point, one of the things that's in the strike statement is that unhoused detainees are exchanged out of their dirty clothes and into clean jail issue clothing without being showered or sanitized, and then sent to the holding cells to sit and lay down in vomit, urine, right, feces, et cetera. So even if we say, okay, they're not sitting in vomit, urine, feces, semen, why would unhoused folks that have been living on the street for weeks, months, however long before they're in your custody, why would you not shower them and clean them before putting them in a cell, you know, with 30 other, or a unit, you know, with 30, 40 other men?
Right. And to you and I, that sounds like a very logical action to do something like that, to make someone take a shower. But you can't force people to shower. You can't force people to eat. You still have your liberties as an individual, your freedom to do that. That some of our people who suffer issues do not want to shower. We try and encourage them to, but we can't force them to. If we start forcing people to shower and force clean people, we would get sued so quick your head would spin. The ACLU would be all over us. And so you have to do this balancing act to try to encourage people to be clean, to be healthy. And that's kind of where the process starts. You got to remember when we're...
So just to clarify, you're saying you give everyone the opportunity to take a shower on their way in?
Yes, absolutely. Everybody has the opportunity to shower. Yes.
We just have about 60 seconds. Oh, go ahead, Sergeant.
Yeah, no, I just think, I think that our jail become a place where a lot is going on, issues that we have never faced before. A lot of that is the result of what we see going on in our communities.
We have just 60 seconds to go. Have negotiations begun? Are there any of the demands that you all are considering meeting off top?
Absolutely. We've been talking to the strikers every day. We have a team that liaisons with them. And there's common ground where we can make sure that their demands are met. There's certain other demands that they're making that are a little outrageous. They want Netflix and they want some other thing. But I mean, where we can meet common ground and it's not a big deal, which is pretty much everything. Most stuff is they already have. I think this is more of a movement that's motivated around incarceration in general. And so their conditions are not as described. I just would adamantly say that.
What's outrageous about Netflix?
What's outrageous about it? Well, I don't know who's going to pay for Netflix and who's going to, where we're going to get all the equipment to Netflix on in the jail. What we would rather see, though, is instead of people, that they would go through programs that are available and that they would try to better themselves with the time they have, their exercise, mental health, and learning, I think would be great versus watching Netflix all day.
All right, Sergeant Kelly, if that's all the time we have, thank you for coming on the show.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff.
That's Sergeant Ray Kelly, a spokesman with the Alameda County Sheriff's Department. Coming up next, we're going to speak to Yolanda Wong, long-term civil rights attorney, and someone who's represented many clients fighting for justice for abuses committed by the Alameda County Sheriff's Department. That's coming up after this very short music break. .45 on the morning here on Upfront. We are continuing our coverage of the strike happening at Santa work strike and hunger strike happening at Santa Rita Jail in Dublin, California. We are joined now by Yolanda Wong, the legal representative of many of the strikers. Good morning, Yolanda.
Good morning.
So first, I just want to get some updates from you about, you know, how the strike has grown since we had you in last week and how the jail has responded in terms of any retaliation.
What the jail has done is they have fired all the men workers. As far as I understand, they've gone in and taken all the extra food. They've taken away any of the perks that they've had, any extra clothing that they were allowed because they need to change after they work. And then in exchange, they have corralled the women and forced them to be working. So women have been working 7 days a week doing the jobs that the men have been doing. And some of them are really difficult for the women because it takes a certain amount of strength to do the lifting, especially in the dishwashing area. And I know the dishwashing area in the kitchen is especially problematic because some of the men have actually developed hernias from doing the lifting. It's an unergonomic setup, and the women are struggling and doing it. And they're also been told that they have no choice but to work. So they've been working 7 days a week.
And some of the women, based on reports from the inside, that have been that are doing the food, particularly, don't have the medical clearance to be handling the food.
That's what I hear. I've not been able to confirm that, but okay. You know, it takes the one of the reasons why they've been using the men is because there's so many more men, and it takes a lot of power, people power, to produce 16,000 meals a day, which is what the kitchen in Santa Rita produces for not only Santa Rita, but six other county jails in the Bay Area.
Sergeant Kelly, we'd had him on right before you. You were listening in the lobby. I just want to walk through some of the things he said. One is that there's an exaggeration of the conditions inside of Santa Rita Jail and that this is part of the decarceration movement.
There's definitely a decarceration movement, but this strike, both the hunger strike and work strike, was spontaneous. The prisoners inside organized it. They called it, they told us, and then we responded to it. So it had nothing to do with decarceration. And Santa Rita is inside and the outside is totally different. If you walk into the front lobby tannery, it's very clean. Mm-hmm. But no one, except if you're arrested and booked, gets to see the inside. And the problems that I've been hearing about sanitation inside have been going on for years. And almost everybody that I speak to makes the same statement. And they always say, if you talk to the jail, they'll show you photos of all their supplies in their closets, which is probably true. They have all these supplies in their closets. The problem is they don't give these supplies to the prisoners to use. And that's the part I don't understand.
Sergeant Kelly also said that negotiations have begun. Is that true?
I have had one conversation with the county council. We've reviewed the demands. I have not gotten a response back, but I've been told that I will get a response sometime this week.
There is a hunger strike in addition to a work stoppage. Any reports on how people are holding up in terms of their health?
I think that the men made a decision to stop the hunger and work strike on Friday. Okay. There was a concern that some of the men who had diabetes or health conditions were not getting adequate care or needed to eat, and they wanted to make sure that they were taking care of them. So the decision was made to stop the strike. They know that they can start it at any time, and they want to see what the county's response is.
So now that the strike has stopped, interesting that Sergeant Kelly didn't mention that, but now that the strike is over, what leverage do the people incarcerated there feel they have to get any of these demands met?
The supporters, including IWOC, which I think it's, I'm not sure what the acronym stands for, but they've been doing support, including going out Monday and Wednesday nights to pick up people who are released late at night after the buses stop and giving them rides home, as well as providing food when people are let out really late. They have been organizing calls to the Board of Supervisors and to the jail themselves. One of the key demands is that there should be no forced labor at the jail and that there should be no slave labor. Anybody who works in the jail should be compensated either through reduced time off their sentence or some kind of minimum pay. I mean, in state prison, it's $2 a day. It's not really a lot of money, but it's something. It allows for phone calls, allows for them to buy a few things from the commissary, and I think that that's what Alameda County should be moving towards.
I was going to get to that. So in the state penitentiary system, people are, I mean, air quotes, compensated for their labor. But in like jail systems across the country, is there a precedent for people getting paid for their labor?
As far as I know, the law in California is if the local county jail hires you out to someone else, they're required to give you $2 an hour and give you workman's comp if you get hurt. But as far none of the workers who work for the jail are compensated. So they do the cleaning, they do the laundry, they do the cooking, they do this, all of the service, and there's no benefit, no time off, no credit on their sentence, no compensation.
And in theory, because particularly people that are making meals, they're not just making meals for Santa Rita, they're making meals for several jails across the Bay Area. So technically they are being hired out to other facilities, correct?
That's the argument, and the jail disagrees. And I know that there are lawyers who are looking into that issue because there's a profit being made. And I feel that if there's a profit being made, then there should be some compensation to the people who are doing the work.
Speaking of civil rights attorney Yolanda Wong, who has been representing many of the people involved in the Santa Rita hunger strike and work stoppage, can you kind of back up a second and paint us a picture of who's in Santa Rita these days? Like how long are prisoners spending there before release?
There's a variety of different people. There are people who are there on felonies, and those people, I would say, who can't bail out or don't have the money to bail out, typically spend long periods of time, years in custody.
And these are people who have not been convicted but are awaiting
Correct.
Trial.
Something like 85 to 88% of everyone in Santa Rita is pretrial. There's a presumption of innocence. And then you have a lot of people who are there for drugs, meth, opiates, who are being arrested. And then you have the homeless who are being picked up. I mean, the question becomes, why are we picking up the homeless? I had a client who was homeless, but she was working. She was working as a service worker in a fast food place. She just couldn't afford rent. So she was living under a freeway overpass with her family, and she had a child. The Alameda County Sheriff that patrolled it arrested her for child endangerment because she had a young child with her and put her in jail. So the question becomes, why are they doing that? I mean, if Charlotte County feels like they're not set up for that population, then they don't have to be making those arrests. That's a discretionary effort on their part. Or they can take them somewhere else. One of the points that I would contest with Sergeant Kelly is they were awarded by the county a grant to run something called the MOMS program, which is to provide housing for women with young children. And that grant was taken away from a nonprofit that was running that program in Alameda County. I understand that they've been able to develop a beautiful building with really nice apartments for women, and those apartments are not full. They're empty. I was able to place a client in there, and she was astonished that there isn't a waiting line of thousands of women. And so they have these grants. They've been getting all this money. But the motivation from the jail is not to provide direct services. So those services aren't reaching the people who need them. And that's the conflict. I don't think the jail is the place to give the money to, and I don't think the jail is the place to put these people into. There needs to be social services, and I believe there's $40 million that the county is sitting on that should be cut loose to deal with the homeless crisis that we're facing.
To that point, I want to get to this issue of oversight, because one of the things that you heard Sergeant Kelly say was that if conditions were this bad in the jail, they would be shut down immediately. And my response to him was, by who? Because there are lots of us, APTP, Ella Baker Center, folks that have been clamoring for oversight, and it doesn't seem like anyone is overseeing the jail or Sheriff Ahern.
The problem with these inspections that Sergeant Kelly was referring to is none of them are spontaneous. They're all Potemkin villages. They know months in advance that there's going to be an inspection. They can get the place cleaned up. They control where these people walk through. They control who these people talk to. And so the inspection looks great. I mean, if you have a health inspection inspecting a kitchen, a commercial kitchen, a restaurant, they never tell them we're going to come on Thursday night. They have to do it spontaneously to see them in the act, to see what is the standard. And I think that's the difference, that if the jail knows the inspection is going to be coming, if they have months to prepare for it, of course they can clear the inspection. There are no spontaneous inspections. Even the grand jury now must schedule an appointment to come in and examine the jail. And that way, the examination is both bogus because it's a setup.
So I'm curious kind of about the organizing environment inside the jail. I mean, we've covered a lot of hunger strikes inside state prisons, and often, you know, these are folks who are there serving multi-year sentences. They've had time to build relationships, organizing infrastructure. I think of a jail as a place people are passing through that they have some hope of getting out of relatively soon. Like, what made it possible for an organized hunger strike and work stoppage to take place?
Well, I think that is one of the reasons why jail conditions have been so awful, and jail conditions only become apparent to the public when something serious like a death or someone becomes very maiming, you know, some kind of fight where someone's beat up is known to the public. I think that's one of the reasons why jails do not organize. And what's remarkable is that these men who've been in jail, you know, 4 months, 6 months, fairly recently, were motivated because they experienced a death. Between Thursday and Saturday of the week before they struck, there were two people who went down, and they believe that one of those people died. They don't have the name of this person because he had just been booked, and I think it really upset them that they were pushing the button. They were asking for a response from jail deputies, and jail deputies didn't act as if this was important. And when you are in a cell in which you have no power and no control, and someone is that ill that you think they're dying, and the people in control are not responding, that was the trigger. That was the trigger that said that these conditions are intolerable and we need to do something.
What, if any, response did the strike get from the Board of Supervisors, who in theory oversee the jail?
None. There have been no response. I have not heard from the board. I know that there have been calls every day to the board, and I know that people are planning to show up on the 14th to the Public Protection Subcommittee to talk about this. But this is an issue, is that our board is not responsive. They are lifetime electorates. They're not challenged in votes, and so they feel like they have a secure job, and they don't have to respond to what the community is feeling.
One last question that I think is important that we haven't been able to talk very much about, and that's the utilization of solitary confinement inside of Santa Rita. What do you know about that?
Well, for one thing, Santa Rita is going to say, oh, we don't have solitary confinement, but it's called administrative segregation or some form of isolation. It's, in fact, solitary confinement. People are locked up in there 23, 24 hours a day. The problem is the standards by which jails are governed from the state are really low. They only have to allow people out 3 hours a day. So they can take someone, lock you up 7 days a week for 24 hours and only let you out 3 hours a week, which is at the most a half hour, 6 days a week. And so this is what they do. And they use it as a means of intimidation. They use it as a means of control. And there's, to me, too many people locked up in there, because once you get in there and you can't come out, then you start developing mental health issues from the lack of contact with other people.
Yolanda Wong, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Yolanda Wong is a longtime civil rights attorney and has represented many clients fighting for justice in response to abuses committed against them by the Alameda County Sheriff's Department.